How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation. Everybody, welcome back to another episode of A Tale of Two Hygienists. This is Andrew. This is episode number 27, I believe, and we're super excited about this. This is so fantastic. This episode is brought to you in part again by Smiles at Sea. Smiles at Sea, you know what? I'm not even going to read the script this time. I feel like we've kind of nailed it to death the last couple of times that we've been speaking about it. And I don't think that there's any better endorsement that I can give than just to tell you all, sign up and sign up fast to Smiles at Sea. It's a CE cruise. It's going to be leaving from New Orleans. It's going to go to Cozumel and back. While we're on board, we have some of the best, the most amazing speakers that are out there to listen to. And, you know, I can't give it a better endorsement than that. So when you want to sign up, you're going to get up to 19 hours of CE. It's just going to be a very relaxed environment with your friends, and you're going to learn a lot, have a lot of fun. So go sign up. You can go to smilesatsea.com, or you can call Dental J. He is the cruise planner, and the phone number for that is 954-420-9133. And I hope everyone can make it. It's going to be a great time. Michelle and I will be there. As you heard in the episode last week, my brother Mike's going to be there. A lot of our dental friends are going to be there. So come out and support our other dental friend, Elijah, who is putting all this on for us. And we're going to have a great time. So another thing I wanted to kind of talk about real quick in this intro, today's episode is going to be amazing. I think you guys are really going to like it. Michelle and I were talking about the examining process. So recently, in a lot of the online message boards and the forums, Facebook groups, etc., we've been seeing a lot of people saying, yeah, I finally passed my board. So I've taken this test, I've taken that test. Which test is better to take? Why is it better to take it? And so Michelle and I kind of went over a few of my thoughts about how to pass the test. So I'm not a very experienced examiner. I think I don't actually even say what group I examine with, although I don't think it's much of a secret. I think that's something that's easily found out, but I'm very high on this group and how they are calibrated and how they test. And I was actually just talking to a dental hygiene student friend of mine. Well, she actually has graduated just recently, and she took the test from the same group. I wasn't a part of it. But she had mentioned how helpful everyone was and how the lead examiner, the chief examiner, was really trying to get everyone to pass, still staying within the ethical guidelines and ethical bounds, but just making sure people had patience and trying to work with students to move people around and do different submissions and all of that. Because the end result is, the end goal is that people are really, we want these people to pass. We want the students who've gone through 2 years of just pure hell, more or less, to be able to show that they're competent in what they're doing. And this is a good, you know, it's already hard enough as it is. And so we don't need to make it any harder for them. If there's anything that we can do to make it an easier process, then we will. And so that's kind of what we're talking about in this episode. I really hope that you like it. I know it's a little bit late for some of you students out there, but hopefully some of your first year students will get a lot of information out of this, for when it comes to test time. Another thing I wanted to talk about is we've gotten a lot of love from you guys over the last, I think this has been 8 months now that we're doing this. And I'm really sorry, but I'm way behind on reading the reviews. So let me read. I think there's maybe three of them that I haven't read on the air yet. So I'll start with one that was back in April by Hazy BK. It says, "Thank you," was the title of it. "Awesome podcast with great information every week. You make my commute interesting and fun. You've answered a few questions I've had about this crazy field we work in. You keep me well informed. Once again, thank you." Well, thank you for writing that in. And you know, we're just trying to, exactly right. We want to try and keep this commute that most of us have just entertaining and keep our mind, you know, loose and light as we're going into our work day, or even coming home. You know, we got 1,000 things to do once we get home too, right? So let's just put our brain on autopilot, listen to a little bit of dental hygiene podcast. It's not the mundane. We have another one from Leslie, MSDH, and this is also back in the end of April, titled "Love This Podcast," 5 stars. "Michelle and Andrew are an amazing team. This dynamic duo has a wonderful podcast that is not only entertaining, but also educational. Their guests are well-informed about our dental world and often offer insight on how we can think outside of our dental box. Their enthusiasm for our profession is contagious. You've got to listen to this. Thank you both so much." Thank you, Leslie. I was writing an email trying to get some guests booked for the podcast this week, some pretty kind of high profile guests. And one of the things that I was trying to explain was basically what Leslie was talking about is why is our podcast better than other people's podcast, or why should they take their time away from their career or their volunteering with, you know, if it's with an association or something, why should they take the time to do the podcast with us? And what I mentioned was our guests. I think the reason that we've been so successful was because our guests are very knowledgeable and they know their material front and back, and they're very just wonderful and giving and loving. And I know Michelle and I have talked about that 1,000 times, and so I won't go into it too much more, but you're right, Leslie. I mean, our guests are great. They have a lot of enthusiasm. They're very professional. So thanks for writing that in. And the last one is from Christy, RDH. And that was just recently. That was just in here this month in June. She says, "I never knew I would love listening to a podcast as much as I enjoy this one. Michelle and Andrew always seem to talk about what I want to hear more about. They provide the shot in the arm that I need to keep the love and passion of being an RDH going. Thanks, guys." You're welcome. I don't know what to really say about that. But thank you so much for Christy for the kind words, and thank you everyone for reviewing and also rating the podcast. We don't have that many still. We still have about 10 reviews going. I think I said we need about 15. I might have said 20, but I think I'm going to drop it down to 15, and then also 1,000 likes on our Facebook page, and we'll do that first giveaway with the Andy RDH t-shirts. So go in and do that. You can just go into your iTunes. Yeah, you go into iTunes, you click on our podcast, there will be a ratings and review thing, and you go into there, and you need to be logged in, but most of you are, since you're going to be downloading a podcast already, and you write a review. There's a little thing that says write a review, click on that, and you do it. We appreciate any feedback that you have. We've also got a lot of mail this last week on our Facebook page. A lot of messages, you know, on our Facebook page. Just really, really fabulous, uplifting things. I'll read one quick one, and probably not the whole thing, but I'll just read a little bit of it, because the words that people say to us, I mean, they have a profound impact on why we do what we do. And I know, I, you know, we don't want to get too emotional and too, you know, I don't know. We just, okay. So I'm going to keep the person's name anonymous. But thank you, listener, for writing to us. So the listener wrote in, about how they just recently got a new job and it's pretty close to the house and things are getting better with life. But it says, I have been frustrated lately because I work with people who really don't, quote, get it. And I think this is kind of referring back to my episode last week with Mike, my brother, is I mentioned about, you know, some people get it, some people don't. And it's kind of hard to work with those people that don't get it. And so I think that's kind of what she was responding to. So she decided that after taking a CE course that she was going to start a blog for everyone to read, but she didn't even know exactly what she wanted to talk about. She just knew that she wanted to share what was in her heart and gives it to free for us, the fellow heart hygienists that are out there. And so it took her a while to kind of to get it going, and she never really listened to any of the podcasts before. She said, the first podcast I listened to was the one with Cindy Johnson. She was amazing. I reached out to her, truly an inspirational RDH, which is true. Yes, Cindy, you're awesome. And then came the one about ice chips. I had been recommending them since they appeared on Shark Tank. I would give them as a palliative gift to my patients who were undergoing cancer treatments. The joy of myofunctional therapist. She expounded on what Trisha introduced me to about mouth breathing. And guess what? My middle-aged son is a mouth breather and a snorer. And I am working with him myself to get him to breathe through his nose, and I see a major difference already. Every episode has been truly invigorating for me, and in some ways, life-altering. So I wanted to say thank you. It's done more for me than a small reply on Facebook could ever convey. And so, you know, I don't even know what to say about that. It's super sweet, super touching. We're very grateful. So thank you for doing that. A couple other things. Let's see. I got made fun of this last week for my, I think the term was 13-year-old girl, like giggling in the last episode with my brother, Mike, at the very beginning. Several of you guys commented about my laugh and, sorry, I guess what you guys couldn't see was this was really late at night. Mike wanted nothing to do with this at all. And he was making these faces, and it's the faces that only a sibling would understand of pain, regret, and agony. I don't know. It's just that look that I knew that I was getting. And so it was funny to me that I was making him do this, even though I know that he really enjoyed it. Another thing I wanted to kind of address real quick, from last week's episode, no, I did not mean to imply that all women are terrible and guys rule the world. There was one listener that made a joke about it, and I'm grateful that you guys have sense of humors and that you guys understand that that's not really anywhere close to anything that I would really mean to imply. Also, we have ADHA coming up. Michelle and I are going to be there. I'll be coming in Thursday, and staying through Friday. And I think Michelle's going to be there through the weekend at the Tepe booth. So go visit her at the Tepe booth. There are also a few of our friends are going to be there. I know Sarah Thiel from CE Zoom will be there. So go visit her. All of our friends at American Eagle will be there. So go visit them. And Deborah Carrier will be there from Twice as Nice Uniforms. So go visit her. And just there'll be a lot of people. So go visit all of the friends that you've heard on the podcast if they have a product that they're going to showcase. And then, yeah, if you're going to be at ADHA, let's meet up. Michelle and I are also going to be at Under One Roof, don't forget. So let's figure out a time to meet up at Under One Roof as well. I know Michelle's going to be there with Tepe, but we can definitely make time to do a meet and greet sometime. So just shoot us an email or a Facebook message, probably be the best way to get a hold of us. Let us know. Also, we are starting up again with looking for people to interview. So we have probably enough interviews through the end of August, September or so. But if you have someone that you were thinking of, we would really like to start working on late fall, early winter interview dates. So shoot us an email if we think will be great. Let us know what they have to offer. And if it's you, then that's great too. Don't be shy. If you're good at something, self-promote. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Shoot. What else? I guess that's it. Hope everyone has a great week. I hope you guys really enjoy this episode of Michelle and I talking about the dental hygiene board exams. All right, everyone, have a great week. I want to talk about today? I want to talk about the whole exam thing.
Okay.
The board exams. Did you guys do yours already?
Yep. 2 weekends ago, when I went in last week, pretty much all had passed. 3 or 4 were still waiting on there.
Nice.
Their exam, which are grades, and I told them they were all lucky, and they were like sweating because they had to wait like, I don't know, a week. I was like, I had to walk uphill and, you know, snow with no shoes kind of story, but it was like 6 weeks that I had to wait for written and for my clinicals. I mean, between the two, I felt like we were going to graduate before we even knew if we passed, which sucked. Yeah. So,
well, I'm also going to kind of piggyback on your walking uphill in the snow both ways to school, yada, yada, and just talk about, like, you know, Grandpappy Andrew's got some words of wisdom for the students, like when they're taking, let me back up. So I'm not going to talk about which agency I test for, and I'm not going to talk about like specifics of where I was and all of that kind of stuff. Cause I don't want to ruin the integrity of the test. Right. No. I mean, I want this to be, you know, it's all anonymous is kind of the idea. So what is your understanding though of like, okay, so you're preparing these students to take this test. What is your understanding of, what are the requirements? So you guys have credits, right?
We do a combination of credits and CERTA, which is Southeastern Regional. That's what I'm allowed. I have like 5 states that I'm allowed to practice in or something. But credits is what, I think 30 something.
I thought they were 40 something. I thought I saw a post earlier. It was 42 and something like that.
Yeah, so something way more than 5. Way more than 5.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Of them. Anyway, so we do credits. I'd say probably 90% of the class takes credits. And then I think we had one, but she's in the Air Force. And so she took a different exam. Yeah. I actually don't know which one she ended up taking. And I kind of don't think we had anybody take CERTA this year, but normally we have maybe 3 or 4 that will take it because maybe credits doesn't overlap into the state they might move to or whatever. So I take credits. Our thing that we as faculty members are looking for is we call them bumps. Like I feel a bump of calculus there. I think I said this last time where, you know, I'll sit down with the student and say, I mean, I feel calculus, but it's not a bump. Like I don't want you to think that it's not there. It's there. Cause if you have to clean this patient afterwards and they don't qualify, you better get it all. But it's not board calculus here. Once upon a time we used to like look for bridges of calculus. We're not doing that anymore. We're definitely looking for like mesial distal bumps, lingual bumps, facials of max molars, those kind of areas. I steer them away from third molars, and I steer them away from anything more than a 5 or 6 millimeter pocket.
Yeah, I would say that's, I think in a test that I've done recently, there was a couple that had 7 millimeter pockets. And with the agency that I work with there, they don't rule them out, but they discourage them heavily if at all possible.
I would agree.
Have you heard like on the online forums and things like that of one agency being easier or harder or whatever than the others?
I can't say now, mainly because I'm only working with those two. And so few are taking CERTA anymore. It's really just been credits for us. So I can't say. And, because I'm not there 5 days a week, like some of the other faculty members are now. I'm only 1 day a week, this is the first year that it's been like that. Normally I'm a little more involved, but it looks like, all the criteria has been pretty normal or
the
same across the years that I've been working with CERTA. I know, credits. CERTA used to be quadrants Whereas like they want you to stay in a quadrant more than anything. Mm. Or teeth that were in succession versus, you know, hopping around, which you can do kind of with credits. I know if you wanted to pick all first molars because you had a sufficient of calculus, you could do that. Which I still tell them to try to stay in order if they can. Stick in an area for anesthesia purposes.
Yeah, I was going to say, so one of the biggest issues that I've seen during the testing part is that, one, for whatever reason, the students opt not to anesthetize their patients. I know. Not all of them, but some of them, I think that they're worried about time and getting a doctor over to, because I don't think that all of them can do it in different states.
Okay. Yeah.
So they need a dentist to come over and anesthetize and blah, blah, blah. And so, which I understand that, but Orakix, I'm really sorry, not going to cut it.
No.
What my advice for that one is, if you can get quadrant calculus, that's the best. And if you can't, then, I would go ahead and numb up whatever teeth that you're going to be doing. So even if it's bilateral IAs, I don't care. This is your board exam. You need to take it seriously and do a really good job. I was kind of frustrated because some of these patients are kind of babies and I understand that patient selection is really hard and you know, you kind of just take what you get, but because they're such babies, you need to just really just know them up and go to town, because I feel like some of them, I actually don't even know who passed or who failed. That's the kind of the cool part too about the way we do it.
So do you, when you go behind, you don't know if somebody agreed with you or not?
No. Wow. And crazy, it's very, well, and you know, being a newbie to all these,
you want
to
make sure you're doing it right.
I want to make sure that I'm calibrated. So what they have set up is they have different calibration tests. Okay. So first of all, we have an orientation, that it was a couple hours long. I mean, it was 200 plus slides, I think. Plus all the way through it, there was different tests that they would say, okay, based on the information you've heard, does this qualify? Does this not qualify? What is, you know, all these different scenarios. Yeah. So you need to be paying attention the whole entire time. And then they will, then you have your score at the very end. And then at the very end, they also have another, like a real test. So those are kind of like practice test questions. Then they have a real test at the very end. If you're not calibrated to where everyone else is, then I don't actually know the penalty because we're all pretty much there. But I would assume that there's some kind of remediary type actions that'll need to happen to make sure everyone understands.
Interesting.
And in addition to that, so that's like a written type thing. In addition to that, there's actually calibration with instrumentation. And so they have models and they have, it's kind of like the typodonts or dentiforms or whatever you want to call them. And there's calculus placed subgingival on them. They put the gums back on there and you have to get them right. I mean, you have to know exactly what you're clicking and what you're not clicking. There are exams. Another calibration exam is if you're using the right end of the Explorer, they'll say, okay, number 15 lingual. Or is this the right end? No. So what I'm trying to kind of illustrate though, it's dead serious. And that's what I'm trying to say is like, you know what? These examiners are highly calibrated. No one's out there to try and fail these patients. We want to give them the benefit of the doubt. And that's actually one of the terms that they had used in kind of the orientation part is about, you know, giving the students the benefit of the doubt. We want them to pass if at all possible. But if they're just not ready, they're not ready. And because the schools can't say, no, you don't get to have you don't get to graduate because the schools have to graduate if they finished all of their didactic and all of their clinical coursework. But if they're still not ready to have a license, that's where the board exams come in. And that's why it's so important to do what we do. And so I thought I was actually very shocked. It was a half day of calibrating and getting everyone on the same page.
So, I mean, this actually, it's interesting because, you know, I have an aversion to this clinical board. I think they're silly. Not silly because I do think your level of calibration, now hearing that, I think that's actually really nice because you can't say that all faculty members are that calibrated. Mm-hmm. And that's extremely important. However, I think what always still bothers me is the patient selection and that a student, I mean, you're pretty much basing it on if luck of if the patient's going to show up, if they're, you know, not going to bail at last minute, that you had to find this very, and maybe certain areas are a little easier and some are harder, but it's not easy to find a patient that meets all of those criteria and then wants to come and wants to be involved and is actually going to show up. I think that's what has always really perturbed me about the boards, is that it's my license and me passing is not really based on my skills, because I know I could pass because I've been trained really well. It's like, hopefully this patient shows up. Hopefully,
right.
Hopefully I had this patient in my chair. I found somebody that met all these criteria and they're going to show up. Like, it's not based on my skill sometimes.
I get that. And I think that for a long time I was leaning that way, kind of on the fence. I thought about portfolio, you know, examinations, or whatever you want to call them. And I mean, I thought about a lot of different things, but ultimately I think that the argument that I heard that makes the most sense in my head is, you know what? Not all of our patients are going to be ideal patients. And if you can't pass in these like circumstances where it is high stress, then I don't really want you having a license yet. You're not ready.
Oh, I don't mind just, the high stress really part. That high stress doesn't.
Well, even the patients that aren't ideal, that aren't perfect, you know what? You know, tough luck. You know what? I get that patients may not show up, and that sucks. And we did have some patients that looked like they were very hungover from the night before, because, you know, if it's a weekend test, and these are in college towns or whatever, well, guess what? People go out and they don't get in until 4 o'clock in the morning, and then they're sleeping in the chair and all that.
That does not now mean that I don't get a license, because I guess that's what them not showing up. It's someone else that has no meaning in my life and my career, that I'm just weighing my future on this person that might not show up like that.
Yeah, how often do the patients not really show up though?
Oh my gosh. Every single year, every single year, probably every single day of the test.
That was never an issue when, like, so I went to the AADB, the American Association of Dental Boards. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was not even like, it was so, the percentage of people not showing up for their exam as a patient is so minute
compared
to the other problems. It might be a regional thing that you guys are experiencing. I'm not saying that patients don't show up. I know that they don't. I just, from everything that we've talked about and the people I've talked to about this, you know, particular situation, that's the least of the worries of passing or not passing.
I would love to see it be on, like, there was a pool, like a patient pool that maybe through credits or CERTA or whatever the other ones are, like, you pulled that from, and then the student maybe was absolutely, they had to find the calculus, they had to still do their patient selection and all of that fun stuff. But then it would actually take us as faculty members out of the equation and put it really on all the shoulders of the student.
Yeah.
You know, if they had something like that.
Yeah, I get that too.
Which I'm fine with that. Like, then they have to know where the calculus is. They have to know that they're picking the right patient if it was from like a pool.
Some of the other instructors were talking about when they go test, you know, in other regions, how everyone that comes in, you know, for the initial part, you know, the selection of, you know, the whatever ones have clickable calculus. That I think they said it was Georgia or something. I can't remember, but somewhere down south. And they're like, yeah, every single one qualified. And it wasn't even a question. We got through it so fast because it was almost rings around every single two. Yeah. So it was very easy for us to whatever. Anyways, I want to talk to you more about the process about it though, because I think I want this to really help the students understand, that at least for this agency, that no one, honestly, the people that are evaluating really want people to pass.
Yeah.
And so the first part is the patients are submitted to us, and we have their selection of teeth that the student has selected. And we look at these, and we have a computer, like a little tablet that we have for each patient. Nice. that brings up. So you enter in the teeth that we're doing. Mm-hmm. And then you just enter in the surfaces that actually have the calculus. So my stuff, you know, let's say I'm the first person, I go over all of the, you know, the paperwork side of things. Mm-hmm. And then I do actually the finding the calculus to what I think it is. And then I close out of that one. It gets submitted to like a kind of like a server, like a central computer. Okay. And then a new fresh screen comes up for the next person that comes in. They can't see what I've written or what I've done. And, you know, it's a small little screen. It's a little tablet, you know, and everyone's kind of spaced out. So no one can really see what I'm doing. And then as soon as I'm done, also it says, hey, you know, we're ready for you in this other chair. So I go directly to this other chair across the room. So it's not like we're watching each other over each other's shoulders or anything like that. And a second person comes in, third person comes in. And then there's like a team captain, and she or he is monitoring like and helping select the surfaces at the very end that everyone agreed on. And so the software has made it so that it's very fair, and it's also very quick. It's almost instantaneous of when we know, you know, what surfaces is going to be.
I love technology.
And it takes out a lot of the human error of, you know, writing down papers and transferring it from one paper to the other. No, it's just there. And then the patient can go back with the student can do the cleaning, and then they come back. When they come back, we do more paperwork. We do some other exams and things like that. We do the probing depths and things. And then let's say that we submitted on, like I found 18 pieces of calculus.
Right.
Well, they have it limited down to here are the ones that I want you to search, 18 lingual, 19 mesial, and they have them kind of broken down. So those are, I don't know if those are randomized or if the team captain selects them or whoever does it, but I don't know ahead of time which ones I'm going to be looking for until I go and I say, okay, 18 lingual, do I feel it? No, let's move on. I don't necessarily have to go around each and every single tooth again. I can if I want, but they're not being graded on it. So there's no real point to doing that. So I'm looking very specifically to each site.
Like it's not every single, at that point, every single evaluator is going to check 18 mesial.
Yeah, right. Okay. Exactly. So we all have the same ones that we're going to be rechecking also, but again, they can't see what I've put in. So if the probing is there, if I say that there's tissue damage there, if I say that there's a disqualified tooth there, no one can see what I put in. And then there's three examiners. So two out of the three have to agree on the same thing. Another thing that's really cool is I haven't got mine yet, but just like the students are evaluated, we're evaluated also. And we want to all be in the same calibration is what they keep saying. And so what they say is they're going to send me a report and they're going to say, okay, compared to the other two evaluators for this patient, well, they probably wouldn't say this patient, but you are in the 50th percentile, you're in the 80th percentile, 100th percentile. You're always agreeing with your colleagues of where the calculus is, which means you're calibrated.
Oh, okay.
If you're always saying, no, there's no calculus, no, there's no calculus, no, there's no calculus, but everyone else is saying there is, obviously you are not calibrated and kind of suck at being an evaluator. And so at that point, then you kind of like, you get, I don't want to say in trouble, because I don't want to say that anyone ever gets in trouble, but you know, you might not be asked to test if you can't do it right.
Yeah.
You know? And so the evaluators are always striving to be as honest as they can. That way they continue to, you know, be able to do their job effectively, and that it's fair for the students. And I think there's also a year-end report or something like that too, that says that, hey, during this whole entire year that you've been evaluating, you are, you know, equally as good, because you're not going to be with the same teams every time. You don't have like a traveling team.
Oh, okay.
It's, you know, a group of six random people that are assigned to each test, or seven or 12 or however many.
Y'all
are
from all over the nation.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't think about it before, because I'm not really sure like what they want me to say. I mean, I don't think there's any international people, but I don't.
So
I can't. I can't say if they're local, if they're not local, if they're same state, different states.
But
I mean,
it's pretty much taken from people have joined this from all over the nation.
It could be from
the same state or from different states.
Mm-hmm. Just not the same school, I think.
I think that makes sense. Yeah.
But yeah, or if you have some sort of affiliation with the school. So if I was somehow affiliated with Yakima as a adjunct faculty member where I come in once a year to do a presentation, I don't know. I would be disqualified from doing that. But
okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's just, I can't explain how like fair it is, because I'm very, I feel like I'm a pretty objective person, and I don't like when people use their emotions or whatever to kind of skew facts. I hate that. That's why I hate politics, and I hate talking about religion with people, is because they have their emotions because, you know, maybe someone hurt them in the past that was a Democrat, and now they hate Democrats for their whole entire life. Same with religion. They hate, you know, someone was mean to them in their congregation, so now that they can't go to, you know, their church anymore, they have to go find a new church, and then they get, you know, hurt again by someone because they call them ugly or whatever. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's just, let's be very objective. And with this type of testing, it is incredibly objective.
It is objective. Yeah.
Yeah. So it makes me happy. I'm very happy to be an examiner. And that's kind of what I want to talk about this on this little bonus episode or whatever we're going to call this one is, you know, I feel like everyone that's on the forums that I've read are like, first of all, they're all freaking out. They are.
Who? Like students or?
Yeah, faculty. Students that post. I've seen faculty post things about how they don't like this type of testing or how they don't like, you know, whatever. And how
we're
they
definitely
think, you know,
coming
people
from
are biased
two different sides on this one for sure.
Yeah. And well, that's why I think that you'd be a person. Like a perfect person to talk to about this, because if you had any question about the testing process,
yeah,
like I would love to tell you. Now, again, I can't say that if it's, you know, CERTA or credits, right?
But I wouldn't you think that they're all very similar? I mean, they're all going to be mm-hmm. calibrated, and I mean, maybe their criteria would be different, but they're,
do you think that they're
different?
Go ahead. So, well, see, I only test for one agency, so I don't really know the difference between them. But there are multiple testers, even at this one, that test for other agencies.
So you can cross test.
I don't think that we do in Washington. So I think that I'm assigned to a certain group for now. And I think someone else on the dental hygiene examining committee is assigned to a different group. And not to say that we couldn't both test or all three of us test, but I don't think that we do. So, what they were saying though, during this, and that's a cool thing too, is I've been able to hear a lot of different opinions and thoughts on different agencies, because they are, you know, it wasn't like the head of CERTA and the head of credits are trying to fill my ears with something. And then the head of REB comes in and says, no, those two suck because of this and this and this. No, it's not like that. It's the actual examiners are talking about, okay, this is the way they take care of us. This is what they have, you know, the expectations for their schools is when they come in. Mm-hmm. This is what they need to have set up. Here are the rules and guidelines, and this is the atmosphere. And the atmosphere was amazing. I was very, very impressed with all of and I hope no one gets offended if they were with me on this thing, this last one, but I was probably the youngest by about 25 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was,
that doesn't actually surprise me. I feel like this is something more retired, or moving out of clinical full-time person would do.
Possibly. No? Probably not. I think that everyone there was working at least 3 days a week in private practice. And one of them was a dentist. One of them was a doctor. And she was pretty good. I know.
She's the exception to the rule.
But again, that's the thing. So let's say that she was outside of the normal, the standard deviation or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. She would get called out on that and said, hey, you are not doing a good enough job. You need to get better. And if she kept not doing very well, then she wouldn't be asked to do these things anymore. That's just the way it goes.
Right.
If you aren't, I mean, I don't want to say good, but the thing is, that's the hard part, is you don't know exactly where you're missing. You don't know if you're being too hard or too lenient.
Right.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they do know, but they say that you're not agreeing with your colleagues is what they're saying. And I'm sure that there's some sort of discussion, you know, one-on-one, eventually of like, hey, this is where you're always missing. You're finding things that other people aren't finding or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it was really good. I didn't get a lot of feedback yet. But because I know that the team captain and the chief examiner can kind of see different stats, And I never got pulled aside and told that I wasn't doing a good enough job. So I feel very good about that. It really was awesome. I really enjoyed myself. It was probably one of the more fun things that I've done in dental hygiene. Oh. And then afterwards we all went out to dinner and, you know, again, I can't really say too much about these individual peoples, but there are, you know, there was people like me who are just, you know, nobody's just going through, you know, dental hygiene world. And then there are people that were like, maybe they were the former directors or current directors of dental hygiene programs, right, or they used to be on the ADHA in some capacity,
right,
or really, really high up the ADHA in some capacity. I mean, these people are pretty amazing. There was a discussion and it was like the first night and we were out at dinner and they said something about, oh yeah, Esther, blah, blah, blah. Let's talk about Esther for a while. And then they looked at me and they said, do you even know who we're talking about? And I was like, well, I'm hoping it's Esther Wilkins.
Like the mother of dental hygiene. Yeah.
Exactly. Know her. I hope that everybody knows who she is. But I just got me thinking. And I was like, well, because they're talking about the different colors of the editions of the books that they have and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I was like, you know,
I've had mine signed.
Ooh. Well, I've never met her. I've seen pictures of, even recent pictures, I think, in the Guy Genist and the Mr. RDH dental hygiene Facebook group. But I was just thinking though, I was like, well, you know, even the younger generations though, I mean, in 10 years, is anyone going to know who Esther is at the same level that we do? Well, or is it going to be, you know, talking about...
I mean, the same as like Phones, Dr. Phones and Irene Newman.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, well, to me though, Phones has a university though.
Yeah.
Named after, that's the thing though, is I think that's a little bit different, but I mean, I'm sure they'll name, if they haven't already named something after Esther.
Yeah.
I would name my school after her.
I would definitely.
Do you Yakima know my, Valley Community that College, I Esther Wilkins.
Know her. I hope somebody tells her the story and then tells her to call me because, so she came to South Carolina, dental hygiene meeting. And this is the year, this is where she fell and broke her hip or her femur.
Oh.
And it was my friend and I that saw it happen and ran over to her. And this woman is feisty. She was on the ground, like busted her head open, busted, like her arm is all cut up and everything's bleeding. Her head, her arm, her finger, shoulder, something is bleeding. And she's sitting on her broken leg. And so we're like, please don't move. We're trying to put pressure on her head. We're trying to put pressure everywhere that's bleeding. And like, just don't move. And she's like, I got a plane to catch tomorrow. And I was like, but we really think something's wrong with you. And I mean, we're like a year out of hygiene school, maybe 23 years old or something like that. And it's like mother of hygiene that just signed our book earlier in the night. And we're like, Miss Wilkins, like, just if you could just hold still. And I mean, she is like, nope, I'm getting up. I got to go catch my plane is early in the morning. I was like, oh my God. And so we're like, please, 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 please. And she moves her leg. And we're like, oh Jesus. All right. She's moved her leg. I was like, please just don't move anymore. We're holding her head and trying to keep her from bleeding. And then finally the ambulance comes and later or the next day. And Nicole and I, my buddy, Nicole Lawrence from hygiene school. Hope you're listening.
Hey, Nicole, how's it going?
Yeah. So she and I, the next day, are like in the breakfast area, and they're like, you know, you're not supposed to move a patient. I'm like, I don't know. Have you ever dealt with Esther Wilkins? She was going to move. And no matter how many times we asked her, please don't move. Please stop. Please don't move. Please. I think your leg is broken. I think you should stay still.
Yeah.
She was like, nope, I got a plane to catch, ladies. Get out of my way. She was determined. That is like, that will live in infamy in my like mind because it was Esther Wilkins. Like we saw Esther Wilkins fall and break her femur bone. Like it was just, it was nuts.
What a trip.
I know. Literally a trip. She tripped and fell. It was crazy, but I love Esther. She's spunky.
Well, I've never had the opportunity to meet her, but maybe soon. Hopefully, it better be soon. I don't know. I'm not sure how much traveling she's
doing.
What is
she, 90 something now?
Yeah, something. But yeah, these people are all talking about her like they knew her. And so I'm just sitting there just as the newbie, youngin'. It felt kind of cool, to be honest. but it was a very loving, warm, engaging. Anyways, do you have any other questions about like the exam process or thoughts that you've heard people say about exams, like myths, rumors, anything I can dispel?
I think the one that I said, but I think you answered it with the calibration and stuff, because, you know, I've always had a hard time saying like, is this calculus? Like, what am I feeling? But it's not a bump. It's just, there's something that's not a smooth route surface. And then I had to pick up a scalar. Like it's,
yeah,
I'm not, I can't, I don't feel okay with just an explorer saying, yes, this is calculus. Sometimes. So I guess, but when you check, it has to be a bump, right?
Yeah. So for board exams, you know, it's calculus. It's it, if you have any question, it's not.
Okay.
Is kind of how we go. There were some areas. So let me think of some good, you know, how, like when you're, let's say that you're doing number 19, right? You're coming from the lingual and you're just exploring. Mm-hmm. And here's another thing I wanted. Sorry, I'll come back to that one in a minute, maybe, okay. If I remember. another little tidbit that I wanted to give to listeners/students. Supra is supra. And it doesn't matter if they have a bridge of calculus from 27 to 22. If it does not extend below the gum line, mm-hmm. it does not count. So the way that I was told and the way I do my
That's
grading.
That's good to know, actually.
Is if great, I displace tissue / blanching it / whatever you want to call it with the Explorer, and I always use an 11-12 Explorer, right? You don't want to use a Shepherd's Hook or whatever. Don't use any of the other garbage.
Yeah, garbage.
I'm sorry. There's a time and a place for all those other ones, but this isn't it. Say so. Use an 11-12, and if you displace the tissue as you are... So I would start coronally and go apically, and you can feel the ledge. And if you go more apical while you're subgingival, and then you come back up towards the coronal portion, I wish this was a video podcast sometimes. And you feel the click before you got to the big ledge, then that's going to count.
Okay.
It doesn't always count if there's a bunch of it. However, if you are exploring from the facial and the tissues are, you know, super inflamed,
right,
and you can start to feel it interproximally, then it'll still work for mesial distal, but it won't work for lingual.
Okay. All right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if that bridge kind of goes interproximally,
right,
then you're still going to be okay. But just check it from all sides and be very confident. Don't submit it. Another thing that I wanted to, another little tidbit, is let me go back to number 19. You're starting from 19, uh-huh, and you're exploring the lingual, and there's calculus, but there's all sorts of depressions where the frications are and things like that. That's still, I feel like a lot of people get hung up on the frications themselves, mm-hmm, thinking it's calculus. Now hopefully there's not going to be that much bone loss. Hopefully that doesn't,
right,
you know,
again,
throw you off that bad.
Choosing those 5+ millimeter,
right,
teeth.
Right. But if there is just a little tiny bit, what we would, you and I, Michelle, would probably feel it was more burnished calculus rather than real clickable, right, calculus. Mm-hmm. I'm probably not going to count that. Because when I go back later on and I'm feeling to see if that you got it all off, well, guess what? I'm not going to click really hard on that one anymore. So the benefit of the doubt actually goes both ways.
Okay.
I probably wouldn't count that initially. Therefore, you know, when I was grading, I'd probably be a little bit, I won't say lenient. Lenient's the wrong word. If I'm not clicking on it, if I'm not getting stuck on it, well, then you got it off.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be perfect, 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 perfect. But I also don't want to mislead the listeners. You better do a really good job.
Right.
Don't leave calculus. Never leave calculus. It's a stupid idea. But even if you aren't 100% perfect, you are going to get a little bit of allowance by the examiners. So we're not super, super like just crazy. Oh my gosh, I felt a little tiny click, even though it was like really light and it was just on the line angle. But I mean, we're not going to freak out about those little things. It's the heavy calculus. That's what we're looking for.
Pretty much everyone can still use piezo and Cavitron, right?
I think so. I don't know what
other ones are. I'm pretty sure credits, I guess I can't, you least from my knowledge of
yeah
working with it, because all of them use it, but and they can anesthetize.
Yeah.
Did you notice some having better scalars than others? Did you notice that at all?
Better scalars?
Like
instruments?
Yeah. Did you see like an array of instruments?
This is actually probably going to give away who I work for.
Okay.
You don't have to. But, okay, but I'll say this. So the cool part is about the agency that I work for, they have a standard issue that they give to each student that has a probe, a mirror, and a 11-12 Explorer.
Oh, okay.
And that stays with the patient. It's the same manufacturer for every single one. So let's say that what are you at? Trident College, right?
Mm-hmm. Trident Tech.
So I don't know anything about South Carolina, but let's say that people from all over South Carolina wanted to go to Trident Tech to examine. I wouldn't know the difference between someone that was in Charleston that went to your school or went to a neighboring school.
Right.
And so sometimes, let's say that if you guys use Hufreedy and the neighboring school uses PDT, well, I'd be able to tell which school that person, the student was from, the submission was from. Well, that's not very fair, is it?
No.
Because what if I have a bias against your school versus their school? Well, that's not cool. So the people that that I work with, they have those three, and that's all the instruments I see is just those three.
Oh,
they
so you don't even see the cassettes or anything?
No.
Nice.
They give them to the patient, and then when they come back for us to check, it's the same exact instruments again.
Do you have cassettes in your office that hold your instruments? This is totally digression, but...
No. We are... Right. I think we're working towards it, though. We did a... like a... Because we have a lot of offices, right? So it's kind of hard to get something right. going. And they've already done the trial offices. And then they asked us for a bunch of information about how our sterilization area is. Mm-hmm. And we take a bunch of photos and talk about how many instruments we had, how many packs we have.
Interesting.
In the hopes of we're going to be, getting them soon. I think that's what they want to go to. And I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I love cassettes.
I do too. I was talking to some people and they're like, no, we don't have cassettes. I was like, really? I love having all my instruments like organized. I just open it up and all of my stuff is there.
Well, I think
there.
It's also better no for the poking. Instruments too.
Yeah. No poking through, no having to sterilize instruments because maybe they got tossed in on top of other instruments and now like the scalar poked through whatever it is. And yeah, they're better on the instruments.
I think that, and I could be wrong. I'm not a scientist, but when two metal objects are sitting in your ultrasonic solution and they're touching and they're vibrating on each other, it just seems like there's going to be a little bit of wear and tear.
I think so.
So I just don't see how that, I feel like you're going to get a cleaner instrument out of the ultrasonic, getting more debris off if there is debris when they're separated like that. I don't know. I just like them. And yeah, you're right. It's safer. No poking, et cetera. Right. My last little tidbit for the students, and then we can be done with this episode. When you're using your Cavitron or piezo, actually go subgingival. Oh, okay. I feel like there were several students who may or may not have passed, probably did not. Because it was very interproximal. It was almost exactly in the middle from the facial.
Yeah,
lingual.
I think that's at least that's where I struggle with my patients. And also when they're exploring, they're not hugging the tooth all the way.
Yes.
So they make the curve, they're making their rotation with their fingers, but that toe of the explorer isn't staying adapted that entire time. And then when they make that up and down stroke, they're not getting it. Like it's just that one that, I mean, it's probably just like a millimeter of it is not adapted to the tooth. And that's all the difference, I think.
And it really is. I mean, cause I'm sure that you guys probably teach us too, but there's all that fluting, for premolars and molars.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
There's all these different little common cavities that people aren't even adapting to. So yeah, that toe, if we're visualizing coming around from the mesial or from the lingual or facial, and then they keep going and it'll go straight interproximally rather than rotating back into the tooth.
Yeah, exactly.
And right where that little fluting is. And so I feel like that was kind of a problem too for some.
No, I think that actually is probably the most common thing that I teach is like, sit down, like I'm going to put my hand on this explorer. I'm going to find the bump. And then I literally want you to put your hand on top of my hand. And I want you to feel it. And then I want you to sit back down and do that exact same thing. And it takes them a few tries, they're like, oh, now I feel it. Like they're just not rolling it into the interproximals or those, you know, curvy fluted parts of the tooth, like you're saying.
No, so come on, students, do better. Yeah. Oh, and, teachers and, do sorry, there's more. A lot of calculus is from the lingual. Quit staying from the facial as you're cleaning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, especially on mandibular.
It's hard to see.
Molars.
Yeah, mandibular molars is a tough
pre-molars. One. But, pre-molars are always the ones that I take the most points off in my patients or my students.
Really?
Pre-molars.
Yeah.
And the lingual is the pre-molars. What's
the first premolars that are hard because you have your canines right there.
I know.
And I feel like a lot of times like it kind of gets crowded because it's starting to rotate back around. And, you know, I don't know. On those ones, actually, from the facial might be a little bit easier to kind of detect the calculus because it's not so pinched. But, it's hard. It's hard to see. It's hard to figure out your ergonomics or whatever. But, you know, stay on the lingual quite a bit more, especially for mandibular teeth, because I feel like, you know, students, you want to take the easy route, and you can't take the easy route, especially for your board exams, you know?
Come on, students. I literally remember scaling all of the teeth that were in my quadrant 40 times. The guy was like, are we done yet? I'm like, I just need to make sure. I don't feel. And then I think I started making up calculus in my mind. It's like, it's there. I just know it's there. And then I think I got like a 96. I probably missed one piece or something.
I would have gave you a 30.
A 30
on yours.
Jeez, tough crowd. Well, thanks really for all people, of but. That information, because I'm sure all of the students and hopefully faculty members, even though they don't really know what you're an examiner for, I think that's good information across the board. It's good for me because, you know, it is definitely something I struggle with, because I'd never want to send a student in there saying, "Yep, this is a good one," and then they don't make it through. That's sad. This is sad for the educator as it is for the student, I think.
Yeah.
Not as expensive.
Yeah. Well, but the onus is on the students, though. This is all, you know, it's all about them being able to detect it, and they need to take responsibility, and they need to not blame the instructors, not blame the institution, not blame the patient. You know, it's hard, but you know what? Yeah, there are patients out there. There are a lot of patients out there. It might not be in your little general vicinity or in your neighborhood, but, you know, there are places out there that you can go that are not dangerous places. Don't go down to the docks or whatever. I'm talking about.
You know,
don't
go honestly, to the alleys waiting for people. We found a lot of patients at, like, firemen.
We should do an episode about where to find patients or a segment or something.
We should get everybody to like send in, where have you found your board patients? Like, were they friends? Were they randos? Were they, I know, you know, here in South Carolina, which people find interesting, we have a large Latino community. I guess because we have the tomato fields and a lot of crops and things like that still here.
But agriculture.
Yeah, a lot of it. And so we still have a lot of Latino, but for the ones that are non-Spanish speaking, it's not an ideal case because there's a lot of just broken Spanglish happening between the two. And that's not fun to not be able to communicate with your patient in a very stressful time. It's not.
Yeah, it's hard. But learn Spanish and you'll be fine.
Yeah, because it's that easy.
Can you imagine? Right. I would like to hear someone with your accent speaking Spanish.
You should come to Nicaragua with me. It's quite hilarious. And my translators make fun of me all the time. I can say dental Spanish. I'm very, very minimal. Like I always say, yo habla español muy poquito. And we have two Spanish girls in our class this year. And so we've pretty much just stuck all of our full Spanish speaking patients with them every time.
I'm sure they love that.
Oh, I know. And this coming class does not have any Spanish speaking students. And we're like, crap, what are we going to do? So should be interesting, but
that'd be fine.
Anyway, thanks for all this information.
Yeah, thanks for meeting with me so early in the morning to do this.
Well, it's a good thing you woke up to go to work and didn't have to go to work.
Yeah, we shouldn't have said that part, but that's okay. All right, thanks, listeners. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.